You're listening to The Lauren Brooker Show on 800 CJBQ. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and don't necessarily represent the opinions of Quenny Broadcasting.
All right, here we go. It's our second hour of The Lauren Brooker Show on this Wednesday morning, and we are so very happy to have you with us. Tomorrow on the show, well, today is Liberation Day, and I'm so happy to be liberated. Sometimes on the show we need to be defibrillated, but today we're liberated, and we'll talk about what Trump might say today. And this thing is, who the heck knows? Well, one of the best people to talk to tomorrow will be Scott Reed. Scott, of course, you see him almost every day on every CTV channel talking about you know, politics and what's going on. Scott, of course, is a Belleville boy. He joins us here all the time. Thank goodness. And we have Scott tomorrow just after the 9 o'clock news. And it'll be another edition of Meet the Candidates tomorrow with Halat or Hastings, Lennox, Addington, and bonus territory, Tyendinega, Liberal candidate Tracy Sweeney Shank will be with us. I'm not sure that's the best political name of all time, but Tracy will be with us on the show, and we're going to find out all about her. And I live in her riding. So I'm excited to learn about Tracy and what she has to offer the Liberal Party. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, we couldn't be more excited to have these two individuals in our studio today. Policing is such an important part of our community. Not only is it something that we discuss as far as our taxes and everything, but listen, the police do so much for us. You know, they just don't show up when the fire department shows up to help get a cat out of a tree. There's way more that the police do. And of course, they don't just give you a ticket for going too fast or going through a red light. The work that the police do is unbelievable. We support the police so much on this show, and we're glad to have Chief Murray Rod in studio. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning, Lauren.
And thanks the chair of the Belleville Police Services Board, Heather Smith. Good morning, Heather.
Morning, Lauren.
And we'll get you just into the mic. And there are, I think this is so cool, Heather. You're doing town halls, right? I think people think that the police are, they you do what we say. We don't want to listen to you, whatever. And just live with it.
Yeah.
But that's not what you're doing. You're trying to make this like a glass house, a glass police station, so people can see in and have their say. I think this is great.
Well, thank you. Well, I'll tell you, the genesis of this is that the Belleville Police Service Board is legislatively responsible for strategic planning. And we do that every 3 or 4 years. So part of that is obviously consulting with the public, and town halls are a great way to reach out. We want citizens to be our community partners. There's an old saying, the police are us, we are the police. We want to hear their voices to come up with the decisions that that are going to be made to impact policing in our community into the future.
It's very interesting, Chief, because obviously there is the Criminal Code of Canada and there's a Highway Traffic Act, and you guys have to follow that, although, you know, some things are, I always think the law is a living thing, right? Yes. And when I always use that example, somebody is going 100 kilometers down, Front Street, and you pull them over and there's a pregnant woman and the kid's crowning, probably not going to get a ticket at that point, right?
You're good on that occasion, I think, yeah.
But, so obviously you have to follow those things. You're not going to change the law, which is the law. But there's ways that the community and the police can interact and things, because sometimes you need to hear from the community. You need to know what they're thinking, because I love that thing that, you know, Brad Stitt and I have been friends for 20 years almost, right? Like, he's a cop. He's there every day, you know? And so listening to what the community is thinking is such a good thing.
It's important. We police with consent of the community, and we talk about being partners, and so we each have a turn to learn and a turn to lead, and we have to know whose turn it is, and if there's gaps in our service or our relationship, we have to identify them and address them. So
I think a town hall, Heather, too, is a great opportunity for people to get answers. Like, you know, we'll have the chief and deputy chief on this show, or we have Brad to talk about traffic issues on this show, and you can get answers. But not everybody listens to the show. So somebody might have something in their mind about how something is being policed, but then once they hear the actual reason or the idea behind it, that might say, oh, okay, now I get it. And sometimes that's a good thing.
Well, exactly.
It's probably always a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know, we are looking for community feedback. Clearly, when there's an emergency, police have to enforce the law. But for most other things, we're partners in this. Mm-hmm. So it's getting people's perspective on policing, the good, bad, the ugly, so that we can respond and plan. And, we're looking for input for people who've had experience with police, people who have ideas about what perhaps makes a good community partner, because that's what this is all about. We're partners in policing and partners in making a healthy, safe community.
Well, there's two town halls. The first one is tonight at the Belleville Police Station. And if you haven't been there, what a great facility it is. I'm sure it's in the public room there, right at the entrance. What time is it tonight?
It's 4 p.m.
4 o'clock. Right, so you'll be serving cocktails because that's cocktail hour.
And coffee and cookies. Sorry, no cocktails.
And then there's another one on the 8th.
Yeah, we're doing one at the Thurlow Town Hall, Jerry Masterson on Harmony Road, because we really want to get feedback from residents who are a little bit north of the city. So.
And is that an interesting thing to police? So if you talk to somebody at, 41 Division in Toronto, that's pretty freaking urban. Like, that's as urban as it gets, right?
Yes.
But Belleville Police are tasked with this urban area, and then there are kilometers where all you see are trees or farm fields. So it's essentially two types of policing that you have to do.
That's true, and that's part of the conversation we're having. We're somewhere in the vicinity of 2,500 incidents a year in the Thurlow, former Thurlow Township area, and we have schools, we have businesses, residences, and neighborhoods, and we want to get to understand their needs and wants, and what, and also have the conversation about what we've actually done, and that they may not know what we're doing. So, which is
good too, right?
Which is good, yes.
Because you can't rest on your laurels.
No,
policing has to be has to advance.
Yes.
So I'm not going to say you're long in the tooth, Chief, but, most chiefs are not, 20 years old either and in their second year of policing. So you've seen it all. What are some of the biggest changes that you may have seen in your career today compared with when you started? And technology certainly has to be one of them.
Technology is the biggest thing, but the complexity is the other. There's been more expected of individual officers in the police service. More time is spent on case law and third-party interests and servicing other people's databases. And we actually have examples of 600% more time spent on tasks or as much as even higher percentages of time spent on tasks because there were more accountability. And investigative processes and standards are all dictated by
everybody has a phone.
Exactly.
Right? Like everybody records if something's going on. Something was happening in Quinney Mall, for example, you'd have 600 videos of that thing, which can be incredibly helpful because now you have 600 angles of the interaction. But the police officer himself has a video right on his chest, right?
And on the vehicle.
So or her chest, I should say. Yeah.
The individual officers and the vehicles are front and rear cameras as well. And so then you take all of that plus the audio and if we end up in a court situation that all that footage has to be redacted, like take your example of a mall, all the innocent people who are third party not involved have to be redacted out. And so every second of that tape has to be analyzed, redaction. It's a huge back end burden.
And a video, as long as we're talking about it, doesn't tell the whole story, right? And it's one piece of evidence in whatever happened there, right?
It's a point in time, but the whole context matters, and that's why it might be 7 seconds of footage that are relevant, but it's in the context of a bigger 7-hour envelope potentially.
It's like the plane that crashed at Pearson, and how the pilot took that video, which showed us all what happened, and it was unbelievable for us to all see, and I thought to myself, who. Like, what pilot is sitting there with a camera just happening to be doing it? And then I was speaking to a pilot who said, pilots do it all the time. They love watching planes come in, and then they can kind of, it's like on an aircraft carrier when they judge if it was a good landing or not. But how fortuitous that was. But it's a, I mean, 10 years ago, nobody would have done that.
It wasn't a, you know, we were canvassing, door knocking, coming back various points of time for shift workers to get witnesses. And,
right.
And now we have the CamSafe program.
Which is great, where people have their doorbell cameras going.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's like everybody has a security system.
Yes. And we because we register them, we can go right to houses and say, this happened within a block or a house. Or.
But on the other hand, it also, on the other side of that, civil liberties come into play, and the fact that people have a right to privacy.
Yes.
And that's something you may hear, you know, tonight and on the 8th, people coming and say, I'm sick of being videotaped all the time or taped.
Sure. You know, you hear, as I say, the good, bad, and the ugly.
Right.
And so that's all going to be part and parcel of what this plan entails.
But I would suggest if you had 100 people and you said, are you mad that there's cameras downtown? Yeah. 99 would be, no, I'm not mad. I'm very happy there are cameras downtown.
I tell you, the tactical advantage of being able to solve matters quickly and prevent repeat victimization.
Right.
It used to be, you know, that things could drag on and multiple victims occur, you know, have been victimized. And we months maybe solving it. Now the time is compressed and the act speaks for itself. And so we are getting guilty pleas earlier and victims of less victimization. So.
Yeah, yeah. And
Lauren, we surveyed the business community through a chamber breakfast. Jill Raycroft offered us an opportunity. And I can just really summarize to say they had lots of great suggestions, but one of the things that they're very happy about is the cameras downtown. That's really helping them solve some of the issues they've had running their businesses.
I often thought to myself, and I know this is maybe a easy way to say it, but if you're not doing anything wrong, who cares, right? And there's nobody sitting in front of the cameras going, oh, look, there's Lauren. Oh, look, Lauren just walked into his doctor's office. Oh, Lauren just walked out of the... Lauren just walked into Lafferty's. Oh, I wonder what's in Lauren's bag. That's not what...
No.
It'd be probably pants, by the way, but that's not the... I mean, I don't care. Nope. Like, you want to look at my Lafferty's bag? Big deal, right? I'd rather know what you just said.
Yes. Yeah. Most people understand if they've gone to Hortons today, got gas anywhere, literally went to a bank... They've definitely been on camera.
Right.
And so, no, it's only public spaces, no expectation of privacy, and we only harvest post-event. Like, we're not shopping.
There's nobody sitting in front of that camera going, no. What's going on today?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, well, yeah. And even if there was, who cares, right?
Exactly.
So those are some of the things that people will be talking about. I assume you're going to get a lot of discussion, Heather, about homelessness, and what's going on downtown and how that's changing and how are the police dealing with it and why is it taking me so long for a police officer to show up at my house, you know, and I pay my taxes, you know, all those kind of things, right?
Lauren, you know, we've had two roundtables, lots of representatives from community partners in at those sessions. And that's been some of the feedback, right, that people are concerned about that. And then the other half of that is that we actually surveyed the guests to the Bridge Street Drop-In Center and got some really great feedback from them. And yes, that's a big issue in our community, but this is where the partnerships come in because it's not our issue, not the police issue to solve. Certainly we enforce the law, but it is a community effort that's going to solve that, and we're part of that. And that's come through in the surveys and the roundtables.
Chief, clearly last time or the time before that you were on the show, we talked about how officers deal with some of these individuals multiple times a day, and it's hard for them to continue to keep up that empathetic level. And as a chief, I know that you want your officers, number one, to be empathetic to people in the community, right? And maybe this is an opportunity for people to hear what the officers have to go through and how they have to deal with this every day. I mean, you and I might drive by and see something happening, just kind of shake our head and wish it wasn't happening, but they're in it.
Well, it's true, but we've had feedback about the compassion and the professionalism of our members.
Yeah.
And that's around the clock when there's nobody else there. There's no public value. It's simply a relationship between an individual and the officers, and the feedback is always consistently positive that our members are very empathetic compassionate. And but if it requires an arrest or some official sort of consequence, then that's still in play. But it doesn't have to be traumatic for anybody. It just has to be addressed.
Right? Well, severe mental illness, addiction, and homelessness is not illegal.
No.
It's a healthcare crisis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, and I think that we're seeing, and we're having these conversations, of course, with businesses. The downtown is very engaged with our community response unit members, and we're proactively dealing with, you know, frequent flyers, as we would say, people who are coming to our attention on a regular basis. But there's wraparound services, interventions being done, and I think the downtown is improving. That's the sense we're getting from the feedback.
Yeah.
Lauren, just a plug to the police officers also. So when we did the surveys with the guests to the drop-in center, really interesting about their satisfaction levels with the police, because it was relatively high. There were one or two that, you know, that hadn't had good experiences, but it's as they're citizens of our community too, that was an important piece to survey, because it's obviously out front in the center, everybody walking by it and seeing it. But it's very interesting, the perspective on policing also. Yeah.
I think, you know, it's such an interesting thing, because sometimes you hear horrible stories about the police, and a lot of them happen out of America or other parts of the world. And, you know, as a middle-class white guy living in Belleville, my interaction with the police has been, you know, very, very non-existent. You know, I've gotten the occasional ticket in my life, and of course I know a bunch of you, but there's people who, and I've had the privilege of doing several ride-alongs, and you get to see that that's not the case with a lot of people. And maybe there are people in our community who simply don't trust you for whatever reason. And it's up to us as a community to try to show that the police are good. They're there for the community, that they're not corrupt. They're not, I mean, it's all these kind of things that it's our job to do, to convince people who may not believe that the police aren't bad. And everybody makes a mistake, too.
Well, this is it. And the fact you read about our mistakes very publicly means that the system's working.
Right? Yeah.
When we make a mistake, it's very public and is addressed, and there's processes and laws in place for that accountability. And we would want it no other way. But there's a whole lot expected of our officers. And to just loop back to the strategic plan, we're engaging our officers. Their survey is being done internally. We were at 110 responses as of yesterday. We're having focus groups, one-on-ones, so that people can speak freely without any peer pressure.
That's probably quite important, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they're constable-led. We have two very able, educated, professionally skilled people conducting the survey and doing the instrument and for validity purposes. And the whole point will be that we will listen to what they tell us. It will inform our work and our strategic investments in their training and their relationships and our processes and strategies. So this is a real exercise engaging internally and externally all our stakeholders.
Do you think there was a time when, so, you know, years and years ago, you'd have beat cops and they get to know everybody and they'd walk around and it was very community oriented, and Dale the drunk was brought to his house or the drunk tank, and then Dale got to go home and so on and so forth. And then we had this different period of policing. And now, do you think it's kind of going back where the engagement with actual people is paramount again?
I'm not going to prejudge what's going to come out of this survey, but what I will say is, if my board will allow me to speak, that's the kind of policing we're hoping for in this community. And I believe that Chief can speak more knowledgeably around that model of policing, because I believe that might be his focus.
I mean, is that the way we're going now? And police, I mean, we don't even call it a police force anymore. It's a police service, right? Because we don't want force.
Yeah.
No, it's funny. What we do best in policing is confuse people with what's supposed to be new. And it's old wine in new bottles. It really is a matter of the most confused rhetoric is around what is community policing. And it's not public relations,
yeah,
right? It is the relationships, and the relationships consistently, repeatedly, by the same people in the same areas of a community over 24 hours and having an area of responsibility that they are accountable to the citizens and for the safety and well-being of those people?
I think, so you have people, as you said, frequent flyers who you deal with every day, or people who have multiple arrests, and of course, our criminal justice system and our court system is and that's not, you bring them, and it's up to our levels of government and our courts to make changes if we're not happy with it, right? It's like everybody is assumed to be given parole. Or not parole, but
bail,
yeah. It's not that, it's the onus is on you to prove that you shouldn't be given bail. Like, everybody's given bail, unless they shouldn't be. People don't know that. They just think that the JPs or judges or whoever just let everybody go. But that's not it.
No.
And it's not up to you to change it. It's up to our governments. It's up to change the laws if we don't like it.
That's right. And citizens have their voice for that conversation through their MPPs and MPs about whatever, you know, statute or federal legislation that's not serving them. And but we are the single point of blame. Right?
Because of course, you're in front of us.
We're very visible. But yes, we don't assign the penalties. And our officers spend, you know, entire careers trying to convict the guilty and prove things. And they have to live with the decisions that are made in courts.
Right. There's a point where you've given your evidence, you've brought the person in, and it's kind of out of your hands.
That's
right.
And we're, you know, just fighting all sorts of legislation around, time frames, for instance, and disclosure issues. And there's so many, the Charter of Rights, again, we wouldn't want it any other way. We want to know that everybody's equal before the law and that we have rights, and the police are on trial, essentially. It's the conduct of the accused is a sideshow, right? The main event is the conduct of the police in the process.
But that's not what the average person living in their house is wanting from the police. No. They want you to take care of those, you know, multiple offenders or people who are constantly breaking the law or whatever. And we assume that you are. I think what we want is that when we call 911 and say, I think there's somebody in my house, that you're there in 2 minutes. And not that somebody says, well, we got some, it's a big list today, so we'll be there at some point. If somebody is truly scared for their life, we want to know that you're going to be there, sirens on or sneaking up, whatever, in minutes.
And that's, response time matters. And we have had days where we were dangerously close to not having resources for 911 calls. And that's part of the staffing argument, why the board strategically wanted to hire additional resources. And but we have to then be able to triage effectively, and if it's not a 911 call, then we'll stand it down until we have the resources. But if it's a 911 call, we want everybody
right.
available.
If you're fighting with your neighbor over a fence line, you're not going to get there in 2 minutes.
That's right. That's right.
And you shouldn't, right?
No.
And maybe you should bring a pie and sit down and have a coffee and try to work it out on yourself, right? But you know what I'm saying.
Well, this is it. And that is the 80% of what we do has nothing to do with crime.
Right.
It is all the other things, but it's all police work.
And I saw that when I was on my two ride-alongs. I'm like, is anybody going to break into something here? Like, is what's going on? How come it's all mental health issues and things like that? And it's fascinating to know what's going on. Everybody, this is the sad part. Everybody should do a ride-along. Everybody in this community should do a ride-along, and then they would see how the police actually operate.
Well, we are undertaking, and it's been loud and clear, that despite the fact that we think we're communicating, as you know, we're not communicating necessarily. We're not pushing out content. We're going to invest in education, prevention, and pushing out proactive content and information that will educate the community. That is one of our strategic...
Yeah.
And it's being validated at every table and every conversation.
How important is social media going to be going forward in police services? I know that a lot of police services will put out if something's going on, like, because let's face it, people follow their phones. But I think video would be an amazing thing too. Like, you know, I don't know how you would do it, but cops have, as you said, the cameras, and a lot of it's evidence, but a lot of it's not. And showing all the stuff you're doing, I think people are quite interested in. There's a reason that show Cops was on the air, right?
Well, Lauren, again, the feedback from the roundtables and surveys is, you know, we need to communicate more. Like, I hear the news every day, and I sometimes think if bad things didn't happen, there'd be no news because, you know, police reports are always on the news.
Yes.
But our goal is to start telling what police do, the good news, the good stories, because there's lots of them that we hear. But again, no capacity or resources to push that out into the community. So I think all those channels will be very important. And when we have a dedicated resource for that, I think you'll be hearing lots more about what we do.
Will people eventually, and I know it's happening in other markets and other communities, will people be able to text 911?
Yeah, that's part of the new generation 911 program. And they'll be able to text and download real-time video, in fact, too.
Oh, wow.
That is all part of the next generation.
So. And I think because sometimes there's young people I talk to and I'm like, well, just give me a call. I'm like, and they look at me like, what are you talking about? Phone? Well, that's what's in your hand, you know. It's a phone. But then you have to make sure that you have everybody. It's like how we still, there are people who want to write an X on a ballot. There's still people who are going to never be able to adjust to technology and want to know that if they do pick up their phone, there will be somebody on the other end.
Well, and we have the School for the Deaf here.
Yeah.
And we are very alive to how are we serving that population. And that's all the accessibility issues. Seniors who, as you say, aren't carrying phones necessarily, we have to be able to be everyone's police service and be there for all their needs.
Is there anything, you know, that police officers don't do? And same with firefighters. Like, firefighters will show up to an emergency health call, right? I mean, you're so, but police officers, they literally are everywhere. Cat in the tree, emergency medical thing, car accidents to control the traffic or the scene, big house fires, and of course, crime, you know, like seriously criminal incidents. And now, don't forget, you guys are also mental health workers. So what's next?
Well, literally, there was the whole retreat, the conversation about the future of policing study that was done almost a decade ago was all about core functions of policing. And at the end of the exercise, they said, well, we want you to really not give up anything. We want, in fact, you to do it better, which means more training. We want to add a couple of things to it that you're not doing.
Uh-huh. Like barbecuing, like you come over and barbecue for somebody, or
but we just don't want to pay for it. That was kind of the conversation, and the reality is like we have to have a too no call too small kind of attitude.
Right.
If someone has a problem, and we're the only one who's awake at 3 a.m. to deal with it, then we're the front line for whatever.
Is that somebody who doesn't have to be a police officer though? So you know how we have this thing where if it's a mental health call, you bring somebody else with them, which can save a life, right? Can we pay somebody who is kind of like the triage person who's like, you know, and then the phone goes over to them and say, okay, so you're having problems with, you know, your neighbor's dog or whatever. Let's have a chat. Or because it doesn't have to be a cop that does that.
Well, here's the thing, though. If you don't know what the next call is going to be and you don't know what it is to get there. I'll give you an example of 3 calls on a Friday evening at my former police service, and it was...
Which is Peterborough, by the way.
Yes, yes. And it was a typical Friday, very busy.
Yeah.
The first call came in banging on the door, the wall of a townhouse complex, and the answer was, we have nobody to send. As soon as somebody's available, send them over. Second call came in a few minutes later. It's getting a little louder. It's really annoying. We're trying to have our dinner here. Could you come? And it was, sorry, we have nobody to send. Third time, this is really getting out of hand. Get somebody over here. At that moment, 2 people said, well, we're just clearing another call. We'll be there, you know, head that way. And it was a homicide. We had a child decapitated.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was in the fight of her life. And nobody knew what it was until we got there. It was just a noise complaint. So that's why...
So how bad do you feel by not sending somebody there? And that's some of the psychological issues, right? Like, nobody knows what's going on. And I can sit here and say, well, it's nobody's fault. It was just some banging on the wall. But somebody is certainly going, my God, if I reacted sooner, that child would have...
Well, and the other part of that conversation was the first officer, when she arrived, was stabbed through the arm by the fleeing murderess. And literally... you don't know what it is until we're there. And that's just one example. It's an extreme example. But the other one is the suspicious person. Well, what makes them suspicious is they're behind your house. They've just come from someone else's yard. They're carrying a backpack and other things in their hand. And that's because they've stolen through every backyard and driveway, you know. So is that something that the police should attend?
Yeah, right. In seconds.
Yeah, and so that becomes low priority because it's not a crime of progress until we find it's a crime of progress.
Right.
So that's the logic of if we're close, just deal with it. Because you don't know what it is till you get there.
Yeah. It's an amazing job.
It really
is. It's not a job. It's a career. It's a lifestyle. It's beyond a career. It's a lifestyle. And it's certain people that want to do it. And maybe that's some stuff that you'll hear too tonight and next week. Because I know that the police service is looking for great individuals to be members.
We are indeed. We're in 2026 hoping to hire 6 additional officers. So we're constantly in a hiring mode. And that would be a great outcome to identify some officers.
Yeah, and when I say individuals, there is, you know, again, I think in the 90s, there's a lot of 20-year-olds being hired right out of whatever. And then policing said, hey, maybe we should get some people who are a tiny bit older with a little bit of life experience because back to the community thing. So you never know who's sitting out there. 29 has had a pretty cool job at a, maybe always, and they didn't think they could be a police officer, but they actually could.
And nowadays, we've just heard of a 55-year-old that was hired. And I hired a 40-year-old woman at one point in my career. And the point is that everybody's, if it's something that was always on your mind, and you want to trade in your hard hat or your briefcase or your nursing uniform or whatever, and you're serious about us, we're serious about you.
Can you imagine there's some great jobs that people may have done out there that would lead perfectly into policing?
If you've had any experience with people,
absolutely,
right.
It's definitely, should not discard or discount how you could.
First of all, it's good money, great pension, of course, a great group of people that will be your brothers and sisters forever. And you know, there's a lot of people, Heather, have you noticed this, that really want to give back?
Well, Lauren, when I meet officers, you know, one of the first things I sort of think is they want to make things better for people, truly want to make things better for people. And you hear these stories and that's their goal for the day. They're not out to ruin somebody's day. They're out to make somebody's really awful day better.
First thing Brad Stitt ever said on the show when he came in and talked about being in the police service, he goes, if I can get somebody to say thank you after pulling them over and getting a ticket, I know I've done it correctly.
Yes, it's very true.
Because I've educated them on why I pulled them over. Because pulling somebody over and just giving them a ticket and being driver's license and you've gone too fast, that does nothing. You have to explain that going 80 in a 40 zone could kill somebody.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Brad's point is well taken. It's kind of the trust you build in the policing motives, right? Somebody pulled over, realizes they've done something wrong. He's done something respectfully. You say thank you.
And I always say to Brad, it's terrifying for that person, right?
Yeah.
It's like people who come on the show, they're terrified sometimes because they've never done it. But Brad does it all day. So we always have to understand that getting pulled over is nerve-wracking and terrifying. And that's that you've ruined their day.
Yes. And no one's phoning 911 because they're on a spell day either, right? Everybody just about we're encountering in the course of a day is in some sort of crisis. That's where it starts. And then we have to de-escalate it and make us turn that frown upside down somehow, right? If we can. And we try.
Well, I think you all try very, very hard. Again, we support the police as much as we can here on the show because it's such an important thing. Tonight at the police station, and then next week, next Tuesday,
at Thurlow Town Hall.
And at 4 o'clock.
4 p.m.
And you
Thanks.
Can ask all the questions you want.
Yes, and we'll be looking for your feedback on a number of questions we have.
Awesome.
And the survey's still up and running.
So. Yes.
Yeah. All right. All right, Chief Rod, thank you so much. Heather, thank you so much as always.
No problem. Thank you.
We'll take a break. When we come back, the beloved Butter Report. It's now beloved, Ted. We'll take a break. It's the Lauren Brooker Show on 800 CJBQ and CJBQ.com.